Blog Talk Radio.
This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening. Good afternoon and welcome. We have today a very special closing. That closing is What is Racial Justice? Curator Fran Joy. And Fran Joy asked the question to artists that participated in the exhibition as, what does racial justice mean? What does it look like? What is your vision of it? And how do you get there? Please join us today for the closing of this important exhibition. Over 25 artists expressed their views about those questions and what is racial justice. We'll have later in our podcast guest speaker, Dr. Wallace, who is a psychologist and former running mate to Mayor Daniel Biss when he ran for governor. She will speak on the current racial climate and the psychological impact that it has made in society. Also, just to say a special thank you to the Knowles Cultural Arts Center, which is owned by the City of Evanston. It is a lively home to over 20 artists and arts organizations offering music, theater, and visual arts programs and studios, comprising of a full stage seating 190 people and two galleries. The galleries exhibit local artists with exhibitions changing every 2 months. This historic building is home to many arts organizations and artists. Fran was able to work again with over 25 artists that participated in an exhibition, and it was favored. She talks about how each piece that's exhibited in the exhibition speaks to the core of racial justice and the interpretation by the artist. I'd like to speak a little bit about the piece that I submitted to the exhibition, and that piece was based on my interpretation of, life and what is happening to our daughters and how they are being, back in the 1930s, I found a Life magazine article where the United States government was, enforcing or actually putting a lot of propaganda out for young girls, at least the age of 15, childbearing age, and, what they they were at the kind of childbearing ages, so a lot of them were having children and getting married at that age to make sure that when the men go off to war, that they are leaving a generation behind. And there was something, again, that was done when I was reading this article in Life magazine. It was done in, the 1930s, basically World War II. And so my piece that I installed is a collage of those images that I found in Life magazine. And it speaks again to how the girls and the media gives girls dolls to play with. They, teach them about motherhood at that young age. And it was very disturbing to me, some of the images that were in there. And I'm an African-American artist, and these the pieces I selected were of white children, and I also painted them black, white, and gray with tints and then color. But the only little African American subject in the piece is a little girl, a little African American girl playing in the water. And I also quoted the statistics of little girls during that age that were African American in the census, and how, you know, many girls at that age were having children that were African American. So it was a very impactful, you know, and disturbing piece. I also talk in that piece about the creation of social experiments and child protection laws that are buried in the Social Security disability laws only after animal rights during this era. We were a country, again, at war. These wartime childhood images come from Original Life magazine. I talk a little bit in that piece about the Dunley twins, or quadruplets, and they were, again, social experiments, and they were put on display. Their family gave them to the American government. And, you know, so they were suffering that type of taboo around their birth and the abuse that happened, where their family were afforded a lavish lifestyle, you know, like hundreds of other children were abused during that time as well. So I was looking at those trends on premarital childhood and childbearing from the 1930s to 1924. And the study shows in the U.S. Census that the percentage of first births conceived out of wedlock almost tripled and were far greater for African-American communities. We also, during the opening, it was part of the International Day of the Girl. It's a United Nations observance held on October 11th every year. It's an official inaugurated by the General Assembly in December of 2011 to recognize girls' rights and raise awareness of the challenges girls must face. Globally, one in three women experienced gender-based violence in her lifetime. In the developing world, one to seven girls is married before age 15 birthday, and some child brides as young as eight or nine. Adolescent girls have the right to a safe, educated, and healthy life, not only during these critical formative years, but also as they mature into women. How do we get there? And racial feminists speak out and organize against violence against women and change the narrative is how I feel that we get there. I am waiting for the closing to begin. Artists are gathering at the Knowles Cultural Arts Center. And so we're going to, you know, eventually play some music, which is something that Blog Talk Radio Creative Conversation has not done in the past, but we'll play some segments of music for you. But just a little bit more about the piece that I, you know, collaged. I had created that piece once before, and this time I added, you know, like mixed media and used fingernail polish and other as lacquer on top. And that, again, was that symbolism of, you know, the femininity that comes with girls starting to do their nails and, you know, wanting to amplify or, you know, beauty and what that looks like. And some of that smell of the fingernail polish is still, like, present on that piece. Other pieces that are in the exhibition that are, you know, noteworthy were Claude Matter, and she chose Simone Biles. She is a 15-year-old young artist that has joined Fran in her curatorial practice. Also, Georgia Blue by Fran Joy is a piece that speaks to her social justice work, along with Stop Killing Black People is one of my favorites of Fran Joy's work. We also have My Purse by Yancey Hughes, and that was featured on Fran Joy's Facebook editorial. So give us a few, and we will have our speakers for today.
This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Khan. Thank you for listening.
And we have on the line our caller. Hi, our caller is. Hi, this is Alpha Bhutan, our first caller. Yes. And we're still waiting for our callers. Again, this is a closing reception at Knowles, and we're getting ready to begin. As this is a live talk.
Thank you, everybody, for coming. I know it's a busy time period, holiday and family and business, but you came out for the closing, and I really appreciate that. I think it was an important show, and it deserved the closing. So. Going to be casual. Well, that's horrible then. Be open, but it's okay. I want to welcome you. I want you to really just honestly take it all in. Because it's coming down. So, I want to especially thank the artists. And I'm going to read each of their names because I have not done this the whole time. I always ask, how many artists? There's actually 27 artists joined here today. And in no particular order, we have Sandra Bridges, Deborah Flint Crawford, Sarah Carter, Candace Hunter, Ben Black, Michael Delgado, Michelle Delgado, Rose Cannon, Alistair Bruton, Cheryl Beverly, Stacey Thomas, David Anthony Geary, Tasha Nemo, Dr. Yaoundé Ovi, Claudia Martin, Joanna Pinsky, David Niari, Yancey Hughes, Michael Burns, Indira Johnson, Cynthia Kirby, Javoy Simmons, Harmony Bachi, Nicholas Barron, Laura Houston Frazier, Jules Von Kronhart, Maggie White, and myself, Lynn Joy. I'm an artist and curator here in Evanston, and this has been kind of like my baby that I've been wanting to do for a while. That's the right racial injustice. So the title of the show is What is Racial Justice? What does it look like? What do you see? What's your vision of it? And how do we get there? So these are expressions of artists that took those questions to heart. And this is how they expressed it. So artists are multiracial, black, white, Middle Eastern. We've got young artists from 16 to 71, all the degree, male, female. And this, I didn't turn anyone down. Everyone that wanted to participate was able. And we got it all done. And the mayor has been sweeping with his family. We had curators from Los Angeles and visit. We had Northwest student classes coming through. There's still people coming through on Monday to see this exhibit. So it has had steady traffic, had interviews from Northwestern news network and a couple of their writers. So it's gotten a lot of fun, and it really was emotional for me. So we're going to let some of the artists talk, and then we have guest speakers. And she's going to be introduced by Laura, and we'll go from there. It's casual today, so no heavy-duty formality, but we want to talk about an artist that we're going to talk about. From Pete, of the artist, from the Chief of the
I have to make sure we talk into the phone.
Began when I first met Fran or knew about Fran
almost 2 years ago, 2018 even. And it was for a round for Ricky Birdsong. And if you're not familiar, he was a Northwestern coach, and he was murdered. It was a hate crime, okay? So they have some sort of a rally, some sort of a racism rally every year at Evanston Township High School. And this particular year, they wanted to run it on a hot dog. And so they came to me, and they said, do you have anything you want to submit? And so I got right on. Now, this is 2018. We started with names that we started hearing in the news more and more. Names like Eric Garner, Michael Brown. These are all names of people that were slain, either gunshot or what have you, through police violence. And the list just grew and grew. So it started there with Ricky Birdsong being the Pope. And then as time went on and more art galleries and art galleries came up, more names were added. The most recent was George Floyd, of course. And then the most recent, my friend Jacob White, whose family also from Evanston, whose father was grew up with me, Jacob Blake, after you Jacob Blake Jr. Jacob Blake Sr. was the pastor of Ebenezer, a church over there on Emerson, long back in the Christian Christianity. So this person popular is not gone. It's unfortunate to say, but it's not gone. In the time for children, there is some things that they have, right? If you see closely when you get the opportunity to see the form and inside to see the face, it's actually a picture of Donald Trump. And I want to touch my finger and he says, why do you mean orange? He said, because he has the face of a cheeto. I mean, this is what kids think. And then, you know, there's certain lettering or the poem itself, my perspective, was a poem that was written by my teenage son at the time, and it's just words that he composed for, I believe, a poetry competition, and lyrics such as, I don't judge much, but I am aware that there are people out there that don't care if I am a black teen or a crack teen, because all they see in me is those collard greens and those sagging jeans that I don't rock. So, you know, those kind of words come from a black man, a black son, that show you, his public, that he's watching. It's his perspective. He's letting you know that I am aware of what my place is. That is my positionality. And there are some things out there that I can't control. But one thing that I can control is how I participate and how I am in my own society and my community around me. It's a little unfortunate because for some, it's easy. For a child like this, not so easy. But this is what I'm saying, out of the mouth of babe. So that's a little bit of my contribution. I don't want to take up any more of your time, but if there's any questions or anything like that, please let me know.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
This is a live stream from Knowles Cultural Arts Center, artists responding to what is racial justice. Curator Fran Joy asks the question,
what does racial justice mean?
This is Pete, and you want to talk a little bit about this? Hello, I'm Pastor Nemo. I am born and raised in Evanston, so went to school, to middle school, college in Illinois, National Lewis. I'm also a teacher. I teach at King Art, sixth grade, my right now. I've been teaching this for about 4 years now. So I just wanted to make pieces that really spoke to the power positivity of Black people. So this piece is titled Standing on the Shoulders, number 2. And I was inspired by my husband and my son, who posed for this piece for me. They wanted to our Black male leaders that are going through. So we have, this is for the Black Panther Party. So we have a father and a son with our Black Power Fist owning their freedom, their strength, their ability, knowing that they are kings with the hats with the crowns on them. And we are just giving praise to those that came before us. We're honoring our ancestors here with Fred Hampton, Bobby Seale, Huey P. Newton, and Elvis Cleaver. My son is standing on the books, so constantly learning about who they are to build that legacy. The books are in red, white, and blue to symbolize the United States of America and the struggles as Black men that they have in our state. But knowing who they are and who they come from, they understand their power and what they are able to do with the knowledge. So we have the boy father because we learn from those that came before us. So again, that's the gifts of strength and the ability to liberate ourselves, to come together as a people, not wanting or needing the government, right, to help us with that, but also understanding that our leaders were taken way too soon, right? So we have the act symbolizing Malcolm X as well, because most of our leaders are unfortunately murdered. They're imprisoned or they have to flee to escape both of those things. And I focused on this particular group because I feel like these folks aren't taught in schools the way that they should be, right? We focus on Martin Luther King, who was part of a nonviolent movement. Very important, but it's great to understand that there are other leaders who had other ideas liberate ourselves. Unfortunately, the outcome was the same, that were murdered, but we have a long-standing tradition of men and women that we're going to fight for our rights and make sure that we receive the justice and the equity and equality that we were supposed to be given. And as a teacher, it's important for me to be able to continue teaching about these some really important people and figures so that we can raise the next generation to be just like them.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you for that. I love that. Okay. Next, we have Javoy Simmons. We would like you to come not too far over here. For the promotion of this exhibit.
And Fran came and invited me to participate in this. She's talking about this whole thing of justice. What will justice look like? And how will we know it? And I struggled with it. think about what I would do, how I'm, you know, and I had different iterations of things of how to accomplish it, thought about. But the bottom line, my understanding is that as African American people of color, whether whatever stripes we are, different genres, it is not our fight alone to make justice happen. We've been, black and brown people, have been doing this for a very long time. And we cannot do it alone. The things that are here symbolize what I believe has to happen in order for all justice and freedom to happen. There has to be a willingness to bear it. What I've written here, supremacy, racism, and privilege. When the broader population, the largest group racially that exists in this country, and across other countries as well, understand that racism is at the heart of this, and racism exists in all. No one escapes that in our country, and will never be able to advance and become what we need to be until this on. And that is what I don't think that this country will survive five more years if this doesn't happen. Or if it is, it will not be the country that you knew or that was intended to be. It will be a despotic kind of place that will not welcome people that look like me and some of you here. So I call out to everyone, and particularly our white brothers and sisters, get in the fray. You know, you have to be, we have to be back to back in this. And if we don't, we all will suffer. We will lose. And so that's the inspiration. In the back, I have it set up that there are little people on there that are kids. And they say, my next move, my next election cycle, time is today. Thank you.
Thank you. That was good. I'm the only other artist left here, so we'll start with the good pieces, and then I'll go out to you to just kind of close things up.
You can take this.
Again, this is a live stream from Knowles Cultural Arts Center, and the curator is Fran Joy.
Laura Frazier is going to introduce our guest speaker for this evening. You guys can sit now if you want.
Okay, thank you, Fran.
And Laura's also an artist here. This piece is her piece. So you could tell them about your piece.
My question is about Dr. Leticia Wallace. When she saw cast as a former Illinois state representative in the 67th district. And so I did get to know her through some community events. And since I am part of this exhibit and am working with Fran and enjoying all of this artwork, and I was talking to Leticia about the concept of the exhibit, and so that's how we thought we would combine efforts here and hear what she has to say. She's going to talk about the psychological effects on racism and implicit bias, and so we're infusing that with our creativity, and I just want to give a warm welcome to Dr. Wallace. Okay, maybe it's not too big. Good afternoon, everybody. Is this okay? It feels so formal. And I wanted to be a little bit formal than that. Fine.
I was just sharing how beautiful and serendipitous and coincidental that the last time I was able to share from about the time of death in my church. Because it is. So some of you may or may not. I do so much stuff. And I'm not going to. Although I can do that. I can get really into a deep lecture. But some of you may have met me a few years ago, become really great friends with the mayor that's been here. So I do have to give a shout out to Mayor and my most of the time that I got to spend in Evanston a few years ago was because I was his running mate when he ran for governor. So it's an amazing time, amazing person. And Evanston is a community that has evolved so much. I don't have a lot of stories from my grandfather, but what I do know is that my grandfather, many, many, many years ago, I can't even tell you when because he's been past almost 20 years, but he was a custodian at Evanston High, probably in the 50s or the 60s. So there was a tie here that I didn't even know really did connect to until a few years ago. But, of course, that's not why I'm here today. I just want to share a little bit about my connection and how I feel still kind of at home in a place that is open enough to even have an existence such as this. I live in a place that does not like to talk about me. I have to leave it into our destiny. I have a death. Keenly aware of pain, even frighteningly aware, I became frighteningly aware of it last year when I posted a picture with us for Mother's Day. He decided that because of Mother's Day in the middle of a pandemic, that we used a virtual paint with all the women in our family. And then he set up this cool little backdrop. We pretended that we were having a little scout and a little back. Our legs, and we had the backdrop and just being funny. I had flowers in my hair, and we started taking selfies to pretend that we were able to travel for Mother's Day. And I posted a picture. Now, it was mentioned that I was formerly a state representative. I'd been out of office for about a year when I posted this picture. But someone then screenshot that picture and shared it and said, look at the leftist, the race-baiting leftist in her thug son. So what indication was there that I was race baiting leftist, and that my son was a thug. Besides what our presence to the world and how we present to the world, what that has to say to subconsciously for them. And then those subconscious thoughts lead to language and behavior that is harmful. And so when I talk about implicit bias, I usually talk about what I call the A's of implicit bias. There is an affective component, what we feel. There's a behavioral component, what we do and say. There's a cognitive component that actually probably exists. So there's this cognitive piece that then informs some behavior. And so in the example that I gave you about my son himself is that for whatever reason, the presence of a black son joined themselves on Mother's Day brought about some feeling, some aspect, right? And then led to some thought that comes. And then led to some behavior. taking the next step and doing these things and seeing. But we can go even further when we talk about the identifier to transform what we want to die or to bring an end to by crisis or in the world that we think is self-defeated. There's so much that goes into the identifier aspect of things and what we deal with every single day. So we hear often this concept of microaggression. Okay? You hear about insults, or microaggression. Now, we have a couple of examples of what those are. And then I can also write this share and stuff with a bunch of my presentation on the but every single one of them has the capacity to have these bodies with this subconscious body. So often, some of us walk in a world where we're constantly solving the okay? So that could be whether you have a place of privilege, an original consumption, you have a place of responsibility, when we're talking about gender, when we're talking about sexual orientation. So many of us walk in duality or even more in terms of identity, right? We have this opportunity to experience privilege in one thing and oppression in another. And then there's still more people that see oppression play out in this space. It plays out in the microaggressions that some of us experience. So we're speaking about race. Some of the things that some of us in this room may be very, very familiar with. Maybe the microaggression of being in a store and either being, as I say, a superpower of being both visible and invisible at the same time. But in going to a space and being ignored, and no one ever comes to the table, or at the seated at a table, and no one ever comes. That's a form of a microaggression. That's a form of being invisible. But to be hypervisible, when I'm in a store, the assumption is that I certainly don't have enough money to pay for or buy whatever. Okay? Those are the microaggressions that happen to us. A micro-insult, an example of that, might be too cheap for a black girl. It's tackled because some of us have heard that. Right? So it's supposed to be a compliment for this insult that's going to come. Okay? Why can't it keep it and not for the black girl? And then the other form of a microaggression, maybe microinvalidation, where you call out, where you just experience it, and people say, oh, it wasn't like that. It wasn't like that. Are you sure it was that? And so I shared both examples because it starts questioning, particularly around the invalidation, that leads to, for some of us, it leads to social anxiety, it can lead to some physical symptoms, attention to stress, the overthinking that comes into going into a space and you have to stop in yourself. I had a former professor who had played a part in racial battle fatigue, because indeed, when you're facing something, it becomes a form of ongoing. And it does create mental, physical, psychological. And so I don't want to belabor. We still have another artist to speak and another piece to speak. But I do want to say that there are some things that maybe we can do to help responsible people talk about. So I think there were reasons for you section or a talk that I'm giving. They don't know what's coming. And in fact, some others, you might even find in state statutes, because either required for speech test understanding of the child, and parts of it were questions for 2015 audience on the bill and are required in police. Do you try to understand and recognize that it's fine? But aside from training, which is, so those of us who are on the receiving end of my profession, be kind to yourself, which can be extremely hard when the world is telling you that you may not be deserving of that. It's okay to pause. It's okay to have a mental health day that you don't explain to anybody else. How many of us have witnessed what many people, including myself, may refer to as 24/7 the videos are constantly on every major station, still have to get up and go to work the next day. It's okay to pause. Be kind. Journal. Take a bubble bath. Do whatever. Do whatever adaptive way of doing this. You have some thought. Always feel like I want to do that. Find people we can talk to. Don't offend if you are the only person and the only one in a space or in a room, day out. So the peace that comes with COVID is real. Sometimes you have to get around people who are experiencing the needs that you can. You find to be supportive. And then it's okay to seek out a culturally competent therapist or counselor. If you do find that you're having too many of those things, you can't get out of bed to see what is the next thing that's going to be psychologically difficult. And so, and for those who may not be aware of their own bias, and it's been around for a very long time, it's not a part of it, but Harvard has some major implicit bias tests. And it looks at biases on actually every conceivable thing you can think of, from biases against people who aren't considered effective, biases against people with disabilities, biases for age and race, gender, sexual orientation. I say, go check it out. Every one of us should, actually. But definitely go check it out. Find out where your mind is at. And then being intentional about learning ways to have more positive people that you bit of advice, that means doing that on your own. Do not expect people from the marginalized group to bear the cognitive and emotional labor of teaching you what they have. For some people, that's like, oh, why wouldn't anyone take the time to do that? Yeah, but mathematically speaking, it's a little impossible about 6 to 7% of the U.S. population to like constantly bear my pain all the time to teach someone have to deal with overcoming their own life. Right? So we live in this world now where there's a million great book clubs. Google Scholar exists, not just Google Scholar. Google Scholar exists. Putting yourself in positions where you have to come in contact with people that will come across your stereotype. And listen. I think that's how we get to a place where we start to be careful about what
again, we're podcasting from Knowles Art Center, Curator Fran Joy. That was our speaker.
So wonderful.
We listen to closing remarks by Curator Fran Joy.
Opportunity available. I want to thank all the artists, and I certainly want to thank you for that discussion because it was very heartfelt, and I could relate to all of it. I've been doing social justice artwork for about the last 10 years. It started with a piece I did after Trayvon Martin was killed, and then it kept going. Because it kept one example after another example after another. The piece with the hands up, that's from 2014, after Mike Brown was gunned down in Missouri with his hands up. It also represents neighborhood gang violence that just shoots randomly at young black boys. So, that piece is actually part of my private collection, and it's just too important. I don't even really want to sell that. A couple other pieces. Value My Life. That piece, I didn't have the Value My Life on it. At first, it was just called Young Girl. And then that's the point I wanted to make, is that her innocence is what I was trying to project, because when I first started trying to make that piece, it was actually a Middle Eastern girl from, I think it was from Iraq, actually running from a bombing, and she had stopped to take a picture with a journalist, and she had a smile, even though she's running from violence. And the piece, artists get kind of weird, but the piece would not let me make her sad. So I turned her into a little girl from Southside Chicago. And just the innocence of being untouched by harm in any kind of way. Not sexual abuse, not violence, none of it. Just, and so the Value of My Life is the point. Like, look at me. I'm okay. I'm a human being. Value my life. And then the last piece I did, I put three pieces in here because I had so much that come in this category, and I didn't know I was going to get such an outpouring of work, but I did, but we made it all fit. And the last piece I did is this piece, all the different things that would make racial justice relevant. And it was just too many to narrow it down. So I just wrote as many as I could think of in her wings. And then I made her to be the judge that would determine what racial justice actually is and means. And that's what she's about. And Martin Luther King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. British like it can't. So you can't just, you know, push it off into a corner or into this side of town or into this block or whatever, because eventually it's going to overflow through poverty, through desperation, through abuse, through being constantly told that you have no value, being constantly shown that you have no value. over and over and over, and that rule of law only applies in first cases. And so I wasn't heard of consent. No. It's a new day. So in terms of this whole exhibit, it's just to make people just stop and think. Because the one thing with art or any kind of creative form, it crosses the boundary. So we all can sit here together, white, black, young, old, in the name of art. And it worked. And we should do it more often. Because the same societal judgment, they're not present. They're not present in the art world in the same way the society projects it up. So I want to thank everybody again. I'm getting emotional. For coming to join us and supporting this effort, supporting me as a curator and as an artist. Many of you here do that, and I really appreciate it. I want you to know that. And this work continues. There's other things coming up that I will have an opportunity to do in this town that will highlight underserved communities and minorities, whether it be LGBTQ, whether it be seniors, whether it be Native American. We're going to make some things happen, at least in the art world. You know, that's the world I love, passionate about, and that's where I can contribute. That's where I try to contribute. And thank you. Yeah. Enjoy. Thank you. You don't want to
come with me?
All right, so it's all casual now until we go home, you guys. Anybody have any questions?
Again, we were.
Questions for our guests? Okay. I guess we're done. And thank you.
All right. Thank you, Fran, curator, for What is Racial Justice? Creative Conversation was live streaming from the Knowles Cultural Arts Center in the city of Evanston. And again, thank you, Fran, for making this happen so that we can live stream the closing reception of What is Racial Justice. And congratulations.
Thank you, Alpha.
This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening.